where this half hour brings an opinion from Al Capp about a prominent phrase in the news. And 2 minutes from now, former TV glamour girl Dagmar recalls her first television break and explains why she changed her name. I'm Brad Crandall, and here's that talented couple next door, the Lawrences.
Summer, summer wind is blowing in my window, and I dream of you. Summer, summer wind is bringing back the memories of the love we knew. The nights are long since you've been gone. Summer, summer lovers can never last forever.
Not so long ago, a tall, voluptuous blonde lady helped to make the early days of nighttime television shows interesting indeed. Her name, Dagmar. She's since performed in nightclubs, films, even ballparks. Her most recent talent, writing mystery spoofs, is further proof of her ability with words and her ready wit. Some lesser-known facts about her childhood, early TV days, and other adventures come out spontaneously during this visit with Monitor reporter Joe Hyder.
Dagmar!
Yes.
Happy to see you, dear.
Thank you. It's so nice to be back on NBC again. That's where I got my start.
I didn't realize that.
Oh, yes. That's when I did the Jerry Lester show, Broadway Open House.
Oh, yes.
On NBC.
How can I forget that?
16 and a half years ago.
Where did you get the name of Dagmar?
Well, Lou Meltzer, a writer, gave me that name. I had been working with all the different comedians, playing straight for them. Bob Hope, Milton Berle, and just all the boys, Burt Parks. And I had done some shows with Jerry Lester, and Paul Monroe, the director, called and said, Jenny, I had a stage name, Jenny Lewis. Would you come over and do a bit on the Jerry Lester show tonight? And Jerry had only done 2 shows at that point. And he said, bring an evening gown. I said, only have one. He said, well, that's all you need. So I went over there, and when I arrived, it was about 10 o'clock. They called me about 20 minutes to 9. Lou Meltzer said, now, here's the gag. You'll be the band singer. Your name will be Dagmar. Anything Jerry asks you, just answer dumb. So I said, I'd be myself. Now, I haven't watched Marie Wilson or anyone, but that's how I got that little high voice. And I said, please, Mr. Lester, because usually I talk so low, if I pick up the phone and ask for room service, I say, good morning, sir.
I think you're smoking cigars.
Yeah.
Listen, you've used the name Jenny Lester, Jenny Lewis as a stage name.
Jenny.
Well, what is your given name?
My name was Virginia Ruth Egner.
Mm-hmm.
When I started school, I couldn't spell Virginia, so I went by Ruth. As a matter of fact, my mother still calls me Ruth, and some of my aunts do. But then I had a stage name, Jenny Lewis. Someone liked that name, just gave me that name. Just like Lou gave me Dagmar, which I made that one legal.
It is now your name.
Oh, yes.
All right, fine. Well, Dagmar, let's talk about...
You can call me Dag.
Dag. Let's talk about reviews that are favorable to you and how you react to the other side of the coin, bad reviews.
Well, I've been very fortunate. Most of the time, I've gotten good reviews, but a few times I didn't. But someone always reasoned first. And if they're good, they show them to me. If they're not, they don't. You know, if it's something that would help me, I tell them to tell me if it's something they had picked out that would help my performance.
It's something constructive.
Right. But otherwise, it just hurts my feelings. I just don't read them. And I always call and thank them for the reviews. There's a fellow called Kevin Thomas out of the Los Angeles Times. I was doing the women last summer, and he wrote a cute review. He said, I remember this line, he said, she comes, and it was in the round, and they couldn't hear a lot of the people. They didn't project loud enough, you know. He said, she comes out loud and clear, like a fire truck at full speed, which devastates the audience, but must be about as much fun as mumps for her co-workers. Because I thought it was adorable.
Have you have a problem with weight?
Always. I'm always having to diet off and on. You know, I used to say I would diet for 3 months and have fun 9 months, but I haven't been on a diet now since last January, really. I've gotten so heavy that I've gained 25 pounds more than I ever weighed. I was under doctor's care, and I would say I gained about 17 of it back.
Hey, Dagmar, you were telling me earlier that you had done baseball shows as part of your career.
Oh, yes. That was the most exciting thing in the world.
What did you do?
Well, Vaughn Monroe and myself and some other kids in the cast, baseball attendance was off, and we played major and minor leagues, which sounds kind of cute. And the press, all the radio and TV and newspapers were really behind this thing because they wanted people to go to the baseballs because we can't get our players unless, you know, we have attendance. So they would put a stage where the pitcher...
Where the mound is.
Right. And we did a show out there, an hour show before the game. And a half hour later, they would start the game, and we'd build up attendance in the baseball parks. I'll never forget one thing that was so funny. After about four states, Vaughn and Rose thought we should have a finale. I said, why, Vaughn? I mean, it's silly, you know, to have a finale that late. Everybody, I used to call a baseball player up and sing a little song to him or something, you know. So he said, yes, we're going to have a finale. I said, all right. So he said, at that time, I hadn't played Annie Get Your Gun. And I didn't know the song. There's no business like show business. And we always got good reviews, as I say, because everybody was behind this thing. So they had three microphones for some of the kids on the left and some on the right, and Vaughn and I were in the center. So I didn't know the song, so I just mouthed it. And the next day, the review was saying about the baseball show, how much they liked it. They said, thought it was terrible that Vaughn and Rue had drowned Dagmar out on that last number. He said to me, I'm going to kill you, so I learned it for the next town. You know, they gave him a bad review because of that.
Hey, Dag, listen, thanks very much.
Thank you, Joe, and goodbye, everybody, and have a nice weekend.
Joe Heider with Dagmar for NBC Monitor.
Singers on Monitor. You're where the best variety sound is every weekend on the Monitor Beacon.
Mom, beat the kitchen heat. Wetson's hamburgers are the thing to eat. Their French fries are also great with Wetson's creamy, refreshing thick shakes. At Wetson's in Lake Grove, New York, on Middle Country Road at the corner of Hawkins Avenue and Stony Brook Road.
This is Bob Considine. Are you sitting there stuck in traffic wishing you were home? Well, but think of how a soldier feels thousands of miles from home. In Vietnam, near the Iron Curtain, or way up in the Arctic, He'd like to be somewhere else, too. But he's one of the 3.5 million of our armed forces. You can let him know someone cares with your gift to USO. USO is a club, a canteen, or a traveling U.S. show. Anyway, it's friendship to any man or woman in uniform. USO gets no government funds. Private contributions are its sole support. So give to the United Fund or Community Chest. Chances are, someone you know needs USO. Traffic's still bad? Be patient. Things could be a lot worse.
WNBC, New York. Monitor once again at 19 minutes after the hour. Brad Crandall, your host, and that man who enjoys controversy, Al Capp, will be heard from immediately after Jimmy Rosselli sings There Must Be a Way.
Monitor brings you the What's Happening sound and radio, keeping you up to date on all matters topical. Our expert on nothing, with opinions on everything, Al Capp, always has something interesting to say about events in the news, public personalities, statements to the press. Right now, his chosen topic involves all three elements. Here is Al Capp.
Mary, the lovely blonde who's in business with a couple of guys named Peter and Paul, was quoted in a recent issue of Big Ten, a college magazine, on the subject of civil rights. And small wonder, girl ballad singers under 30 are the only group whose views on such questions are respected by students, whereas those who've spent so much of their lives in the civil rights movement, they've never learned how to play a guitar, seldom invited to speak at colleges, and are often booed when they do. To Mary, black power is a marvelous set of words which strikes terror inexplicably into the hearts of some people. I take it the group hasn't played Detroit or Newark lately. Mary says Stokely Carmichael knows what black power means, and why should he define it to those who don't? Mary says she understands it. She says to Stokely Carmichael, black power means that so far everybody's got their piece of the establishment, and Stokely simply wants his piece. What Mary doesn't seem to understand, but which a lot of students do, is that Stokely wants his piece toasted. And this is Al Capp for Monitor.
Our talking cartoonist, Al Capp, one of the regulars every weekend. And a young lady who's become a musical regular around here, pretty Petula Clark, offers one of her most recent songs, Imagine.
Yesterday I met him in a dream. And today he called me Imagine. Wants to take me dancing.
Behalf of the Mental Retardation Campaign. Looking for a good way to spend some of your spare time? Well, there's a place where volunteer help is always welcomed, in a school or institution that cares for mentally retarded children. Since the regular staffs of these big institutions are usually overworked, your help would make a big difference in the attention these children get. What could you do? Supervise indoor and outdoor play, help serve meals, read stories, even wash dirty little hands and faces. For information about the needs in this field, write for a free booklet. Address the President's Committee on Mental Retardation, Washington, D.C., 20201.
Thank you.
credit Peter Nero's Piano and Orchestra on Summer Samba. Remember, Monitor is your listening companion right across the nation. Serving most of Mississippi and parts of Louisiana and Alabama is WJDX in Jackson, Mississippi. The NBC station nearest you identifies itself next, after which Monitor returns. This is Brad Crandall.
Monitor never takes a vacation. We're here every weekend on the NBC Radio Network.
Mom, beat the kitchen heat. Wetson's hamburgers are the thing to eat. Their French fries are also great, with Wetson's creamy, refreshing thick shakes. At Wetson's in Queens, New York, there's a Wetson's on the corner of Woodhaven and Queens Boulevards.
This is Thomas Hoving. You can now stop at the Metropolitan Museum of Art for a beer, Tuesday night till 10 o'clock. While you're there, see a picture.
Next on Monitor, the Golden Gate Strings playing I'm a Believer. This is Monitor 67 for Sunday, August 20th. Brad Crandall, your host. A modern priest, critical of his church, explains his stand on divorce, the parish, and married clergy. Father James Kavanaugh, outspoken author of a controversial book which accuses the church of being outdated. Our Monitor guest in just 2 minutes. Trini Lopez first, in praise of brotherhood.
In the land of plenty, where a man can feel it's every need. Why is there greed in the land of plenty? Why can't we find our peace of mind in the land of plenty, where the hills still sound of Indian drums? Why are there slums in the land of plenty, in the land of plenty, where a child is loved to calm his fears? Why are there tears in the land of plenty? Why are we sad? All of
father said, all men are free. When will it be? In the land of plenty. In the land of plenty. Where the talk of war rules all our lives. Will men survive? In the land of plenty.
The ecumenical movement within the Catholic Church has provoked a more outspoken clergy than ever before. Traditions, rules, even matters of faith and morals are being questioned, examined, and criticized. One of the Church's angriest critics is Father James Kavanaugh, author of the book A Modern Priest Looks at His Outdated Church. He reviews some of his personal opinions on church attitudes toward divorce, married priests, preaching, and other related topics in this visit with Monitor reporter Betty Grobley.
Father, what is your position now on divorce, and what is the position of the church and remarriage and so on?
Well, I think that the position of the church has been a very narrow one, Betty, maintaining that when two Catholics are married, or actually two baptized persons, and that when they're not able to make it in the marriage and divorce is indicated, the church would admit the possibility of divorce, but never the possibility of remarriage, calling this a sacramental union. And it's one of the things that I protest very stringently, saying that theology has moved past the point of this very narrow law and has indicated that when love is no longer present, when individuals just have not a marriage, we cannot call this what is sometimes a hate-filled union, a union in Christ, because they happen to be baptized and they happen to be married by a priest. And again, it's the intrusion of legalism into a very living, creative theology. So,
on what was that based?
Well, I think it's one of the chapters that I develop in the book is where the ideal becomes the law. And I think this is the principle involved. There's no question that Christ stood for permanent marriage. But somehow, we always try to reduce ideals to an utter absolute demand, as if there could be no exception or no possibility of error on the part of human beings. And when we cut a person off in the Catholic Church, we cut them off. I mean, the second marriage, even if their children are in the Catholic school and they adopt the whole program and are regular in their attendance of Mass, this man or this woman cannot receive the sacraments and really are outcasts in the church.
Now, what about the position of the parish?
Well, the Catholic parish, in my mind, has actually refused to understand its goals and rather has kind of preserved the traditional forms no matter the result, no matter how irrelevant we grow. We're just refusing to look around for new forms. So we have our parish organizations, we have our parochial schools, even though I believe they are outmoded and no longer have real usefulness. And in general, we still have the large community. We have only updated the liturgy in very minor and superficial ways. And we're refusing to reach the people where they are. I think even our approach to confession, which is kind of lining the people up in assembly line fashion, and not having the small, meaningful community where individuals can actually have contact with one another and care about each other as a Christian community should. We've neglected the aged. We've been Johnny-come-latelys in the race program, all because we spent most of our time, I think I spent 7 out of 10 hours of my priesthood working in schools, teaching children. We've been a very child-oriented church and have neglected the adults.
What has been the reaction? Can you give me one or two from either the hierarchy, your peers in the church?
Actually, there's been kind of a strange silence from the hierarchy or any Vatican authority. They've said nothing, which is fine. They actually kind of ignored me rather than treating the issues. Catholic press, in its inimitable way, has been rather hostile, and again, not taking up issues has been name-calling. I think actually the letters that I receive, several thousand of them already, give some indication that there's a large majority of Catholics that feel as I do. The letters run about 10-1 in favor of what I'm saying.
Oh, they do. You wrote a piece not too long ago in the, was it the Saturday Evening Post, and it was titled, I Am a Priest, I Want to Marry. Was this your personal point of view, or was it more encompassing than that?
Oh, I like to think it was more encompassing. I like to think I've grown a bit since I wrote the article with my celibate's view of marriage. There are many priests who feel this is a real problem, and I think that we will see a married clergy, despite the fact that Pope Paul has recently indicated that we won't. Because I think the theological ferment and the unrest is there, and nothing's going to stop the gradual exodus of priests who are protesting the fact of the celibate state.
You also suggest that priests are generally not good preachers than you think they should be. Would you elaborate on that?
Well, the Catholic priest has never had to be a good preacher. You know, people say, well, he didn't get any training in preaching. Well, we didn't get any training in raising money either, but we've been pretty good at that. And I think if we took it seriously, we would be good preachers. But the people come, and we give them our cliches, and they go, and next week the pews are filled again.
Is it still a mortal sin not to go to Mass?
Well, it certainly isn't in my view, but that's still on the books,
it
assuredly.
Is.
Yes.
Well, you can read lots in this book. It's called A Modern Priest Looks at His Outdated Church, and is by my guest, Father James Kavanaugh. This is Betty Grobley for Monitor.
Here's the sound of Miss Vicky Carr.
I tell myself, what's done is done. I tell myself, don't be a fool. Play the field, have a lot of fun. It's easy when you play it cool. I tell myself, don't be a chump. Who cares? Let him stay away. That's when the phone rings, and I jump. And as I grab the phone, I pray. Let it be to him. Oh, dear God, it must be him. It must be him. Oh, I. After a while, I myself again. I pick the pieces off the floor, put my heart on the shelf again. He'll never hurt me anymore. I'm not a puppet on a string. I'll find somebody else someday. That's when the phone rings. And once again, I start to pray. Let it please be him. Oh, dear God, it must be him. It must be him. Or I shall die. Or I shall die. Oh, hello, hello.
Directly ahead, music by Matt Monroe and Barbara Streisand. And then the latest news from the world of automobile racing, sport and speed. Just stay on the Monitor Beacon. Now, 20th Century Fox presents The St. Valentine's Day Massacre, starring Jason Robards, co-starring George Segal. The St. Valentine's Day Massacre, suggested for mature audiences.
Now at Lowe's and other theaters, Mrs. Louise Nicolai of Farmingdale won $1,000. Mrs. Carol Lyons of Richmond Hill won $1,500. Mrs. Charlotte Coburn of Yonkers won $1,900. And Mrs. Angeline Needham of North Bergen won $2,000 by playing Fortune Phone with Sterling Yates on WNBC. Be a winner. Listen to Fortune Phone and make sure WNBC has your number. Fortune Phone, weekdays at 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. This is the Conversation Station, WNBC, New York. The time? 12 minutes before 9.
At 13 minutes before the hour, you're back with Monitor, just in time to help Barbara Streisand browse through the Help Wanted columns.
You who have dreams, if you act, they will come true. To turn your dreams to a fact, it's up to you. If you have the soul and the spirit, never fear it, you'll see it through. Hearts can inspire other hearts with their fire, for the strong obey when a strong man shows them the way. Stout-hearted men who will fight for the right they adore. Start me with 10 who are stout-hearted men, and I'll soon give you 10,000 more.
Personal regards, sincerely, etc., etc. Now read that back to me, Miss Jones. Miss Jones.
When you can't afford to be dull, sharpen your wits with No-Doze. No-Doze Keep Alert tablets or new chewable mints, safe as coffee, help you become more naturally alert to people and conditions around you.
Sharpen your wits with No-Doze. No-Doze keeps you alert.
If you've got nothing special planned for tomorrow and you're in the northeast part of the country, hop over to Perkins Cove, Maine for their annual Lobsterman's Day celebration. If you still can't decide what to do, well, you got the same problem Matt Monroe has.
What to do, what to do, what to do. Now that I seem to be losing you, what to do with my life when we're out of touch and my heart will want you too much? Where to go, how to know what to say if they ask why I love went astray. Sure. should I run away and hide? That wouldn't be so smart when I know I can't hide from my heart. How to smile now that I'll miss you so. While the love that I feel seems to grow, maybe I ought to try asking you what to say, where to go, what to do. Maybe I ought to try asking you what to say, where to go, what to do.
Everybody, this is Mel Allen with Sport of Speed, which has featured Ted Webb and has been brought to you by the many service stations from coast to coast that carry a brand of Pennsylvania motor oil. You know, friends, some men like Ted Webb, who died this week of a heart attack at the age of 60, bring a special distinction to sports. Ted's presence at a race, whether it was at Indianapolis or a small dirt track or in Nassau, kind of lent magic to the event. Not so much because he communicated his news and views and results to a nationwide audience here on Monitor, but because for more than three decades, he was able to interpret and reveal insights into the lives of men who participate in a sport that is fraught with danger, violence, and of course with great achievement. He made their battle with machines meaningful, gave it dignity. Now, Ted Webb may have looked out of place in the nation's grease pits because he was always impeccably attired, but he spoke the language of the mechanic, the driver, and the car owner, and he was much more knowledgeable than most of them. Why, his office here in New York was a clubhouse for the greats and near greats of the racing world, and I'm talking about people like Sterling Moss and Jim Clark and A.J. Foyt, Sir Donald Campbell, and the last man he ever interviewed, young Peter Ebsen. Yes, it's a measure of the man that he drove to every race he covered rather than flew, regardless of the distance. And with him always was his wonderful wife, Helen, as much of a buff as he was, who charted races or kept track of cars and laps for him. It's a measure of the man, too, that when a race promoter heard of Ted Webb's passing this week, he shook his head and said, "This sport has lost its wheels." The mark Ted Webb left on auto racing can never be erased. Nor can the grief of the racing fraternity be measured. He was one of them, one of their leaders, although he never once drove in competition himself. And, of course, as a colleague, we miss him so very much. I wish he were here today to tell you that rain washed out two big races, the Western North Carolina 500 at the Asheville-Weaverville Speedway, and the 200-mile NASCAR National Championship Sportsman and Modified Stock Car Race at Trenton, New Jersey. Both have been rescheduled, by the way, for next Sunday. At Milwaukee today, Mario Andretti won the 200-mile National Championship Race for Indy Cars by 12 seconds from Al Unser, averaging 105.386 miles per hour, track record. Roger McCluskey was third. Now, last night, A.J. Foyt captured the Tony Bettenhausen Memorial 100 at the Illinois State Fair for the third time. Only seven of the 18 starters finished on the track, which was muddied by rain. Mario Andretti was second and Bud Tingelstad third. Jim Herdebeest, running third on the final lap, jumped the wall but is reported in good condition today. He was awarded a fifth-place finish. As a result of the races in Milwaukee and the Illinois State Fair, A.J. Foyt remains the national point leader with 2,080 points, 60 more than Mario Andretti. Al Unser is third. Elsewhere today at Zeltweg, Austria, Paul Hawkins of Australia drove a Ford GT40 to victory in the Grand Prix of Austria sports car race, averaging 95.1 miles per hour. And at Anna, Sicily, Scotland's Jackie Stewart and Amatra Ford won the Grand Prix of the Mediterranean for Formula 2 cars at an average speed of 142.5 miles per hour. And at Watkins Glen, New York, the 500-kilometer race for sports cars and sedans, A&B production, went to Ed Lothar and Dr. M.R.J. Wiley in a Cobra, averaging a race record 95.66 miles per hour. And friends, that's where the checkered flag falls tonight. This is Mel Allen. Sport of Speed is brought to you twice each week by the many famous brands of Pennsylvania Motor Oil.
The passing of Ted Webb this week has deprived the world of automobile racing of one of its finest, most experienced, and knowledgeable reporters. All of us at Monitor share that loss on a personal level. In just a few seconds, we'll help you keep up with this fast-moving world with NBC Monitor News on the hour, so stay tuned, and you'll stay informed with the largest broadcast news organization in the world. This is Brad Crandall.
Keep to the latest news now. It's on the air. Keep tuned for sports and news now from everywhere.
Hi, this is Red Buttons. How many times this summer will you foolishly spend a dollar or two on nonsense? I mean literally throw it away. Well, that same dollar bill can do two things. One, it can take a boy off the hot, humid streets of New York City and send him to camp for a couple of weeks this summer. And two, it'll make you feel like $1 million. That's pretty good odds, 1,000,000 to 1. Folks, every dollar helps. Please send whatever you can to the Boys Club of New York, Box 77, New York 9, New York. Thank you.
When you listen to Dr. Joyce Brothers, WNBC's practicing psychologist, marriages, men, the best years of your life, diamonds, and knowing a woman by the clothes she wears are just a few of the many subjects you'll hear discussed. Every weekday from 9 a.m. to 10, Dr. Brothers takes calls from listeners and gives them unique advice on how to cope with their problems. If you have a problem of your own, call Dr. Brothers on Plaza 78866. If not, tune in to 660 and discover how you can apply Dr. Joyce Brothers' sound advice to everyday business of living. Join the Lee Leonard Talk and call Plaza 78866 afternoons at 1. The Conversation, WNBC, New York.
NBC Monitor News on the hour. Here's Don Doak.